From 1994 to 1996, Jeffrey Potter lived in a remote village in Nepal, working as an agricultural extension agent. That was a bit of a stretch for a documentary filmmaker who'd been working as a mail carrier after earning his bachelor's in fine arts in New York City. But he'd grown up around Midwestern farms, and Peace Corps training prepared him. He walked everywhere.
Oh, namaste. Namaste.
To visit farmers and work with them on fruit storage cellars, to the bazaar to buy tomatoes. He came to speak Nepali comfortably and to feel at home in his village. He used his tape recorder to introduce his friends and family to his life in Nepal. He and one friend developed an addiction to each other's tapes.
It became a conversation.
Albeit a slow one.
It was always off by the fact that mail would take up to 3 or 4 weeks to get to each other. I mean, my mail went to Kathmandu, and then once a week it was put on a plane and flown to the airport. And then there were porters that would carry goods back and forth to the airport to supply the stores and things in the town. And so one of them, I would pay them like 10 rupees to bring up my mail once a week.
Potter says as he left for the Peace Corps, he feared he would miss out on the opportunities his friends were having. Falling in love, advancing careers, buying houses. But the tapes from Nepal fascinated his friend in Chicago. That intrigue helped Potter overcome his isolation and worries.
Even a boring day, even a hard day in Nepal was a day in Nepal.
After Peace Corps, Potter chose a graduate program in Madison, Wisconsin, where a sizable Nepali-American community lived. He continued speaking the language and returned to Nepal on a Fulbright. The outgrowth of his graduate thesis is a 30-year documentary film and census project in one of the villages where he did Peace Corps work.
I wanted to see how one remote village in the developing world changed over 30 years and how the community itself then coped with some of the changes like the coming of electricity and television and running water and roads and commerce and things like that.
Every 6 years, Potter goes back to shoot video, take photos, and conduct interviews with the residents. To see some of his video from Nepal, visit peacecorpsvoices.org and pull down the Share Video tab. You'll also find web-only features about other volunteers. That's peacecorpsvoices.org. The African, Asian, and Latin American countries known in the 1960s as the Third World or the Developing World hosted Peace Corps volunteers for the first 3 decades. Then, when the Cold War ended, the Peace Corps launched its first programs in formerly communist countries. President George H.W. Bush was in office. He held his own Rose Garden ceremony on June 15, 1990, to honor volunteers going to the former Eastern Bloc. This time, the day was a drizzly one, and the volunteers were headed for Poland and Hungary.
From the time it was first launched in 1961, the Peace Corps has been a thrilling and an ambitious undertaking. Lofty in principle, and yet in its day-to-day struggle with challenging circumstances around the world, as practical and down-to-earth as government ever gets. The United States Peace Corps built its reputation the old-fashioned way, step by step, village by village, family by family, bringing the world a bit closer, one friendship at a time. For nearly 30 years, it has drawn 120,000 idealistic Americans from all walks of life and sent them to the far corners of the earth. And for nearly 30 years, the men and women of America's Peace Corps have built bridges of understanding and goodwill between the peoples of the United States and the peoples of scores of other nations. And today we launch a new people-to-people effort through which the citizens of America, Poland and Hungary can work together in the exhilarating process of building new democratic societies.
The volunteers would work primarily in small business development and as English teachers. President Bush drew upon a visit to volunteers in Africa when he charged these new recruits with carrying the mantle of peace and friendship into Central Europe.
I think back to 1985 when we visited the famine-stricken regions of Africa and saw firsthand the heartbreaking conditions of those lands. And I remember visiting our Peace Corps project and witnessing the quiet heroism of young Americans whose efforts were providing relief and whose lives were truly making a difference. And tomorrow you will set sail for a different region and you'll encounter a different kind of hunger, a different kind of craving from that which Barr and I saw in Africa. But the hunger is powerful and the need is real for the nourishment of free ideas and the sustenance of free enterprise.
During the 1990s, other countries in Europe and Central Asia that had been hostile to or just cut off from the United States would become Peace Corps host countries. In 1992, John Waite, a former volunteer in Burkina Faso, West Africa, got hired to train new volunteers in Albania.
Well, there were very few Americans who knew much about Albania. The first thing when you see it, that might be a potential place to go work, you have to go to the map and find out where it is.
It's in southern Europe, near Greece, and across the Adriatic Sea from Italy. Waite says during the Cold War, Albania was neither aligned with the United States nor the Soviet Union. Its borders were closed. Military bunkers around those borders implied the country was preparing for an invasion, possibly from the United States. Waite says at first, the Albanians were a little disappointed to learn the Americans had scarcely even heard of them.
But we were able to establish some good rapport then in the fact that, wow, okay, you weren't trying to bomb us.
In Africa, Waite had helped entrepreneurs get their small businesses up and running, the same thing the Albanian volunteers would work on. But they'd start from a different place. Would-be business owners didn't know how to operate in a free market.
When we would talk about, you know, market forces and supply and demand, that was kind of new to a lot of folks who things had just been, you know, the government had said all that. You had to take it slow and easy because some of these concepts were just so bizarre almost to the folks who had been living in this under this other way of doing business for 50 years.
It was a similar story in 1999 when Waite became Associate Peace Corps Director in Uzbekistan, a former Soviet republic in Central Asia.
Even though Uzbekistan became independent from the Soviet Union a few years earlier, they were still learning the whole market economics and how they didn't have to just sell to Moscow. They have this whole new world out there that could be their market.
Waite says, like the Albanians, the Uzbeks welcomed the Americans and what they had to offer. Volunteer Betsy Yetter served in a different former Soviet republic from 2004 to 2006. She was in her 50s when she arrived in a small city in Ukraine. She met many highly trained people with skills they had no outlet for. She worked alongside an English-speaking Ukrainian at a small nonprofit. They found that since childhood, they'd been indoctrinated with a similar Cold War rhetoric.
So we'd both grown up as little girls, scared to death of each other. I mean, I remember coming home from kindergarten and hearing the air raid siren and wondering if this was the Russians coming. And she remembered being scared to death of us.
Yetter joined the Peace Corps with a background in social work and management. She says being middle-aged with professional experience gave her perspective on what she was capable of.
I had a sense of what I could do and that it was very small. It was going to be very tiny. And it was just fine. You know, it wasn't a big deal.
She wouldn't lead people out of underemployment or solve the community's social ills. But she did help two Ukrainian women develop presentations they could give in surrounding villages to teach women how to get organized and create the social programs they wanted. Her coworkers became friends. With the one who'd been so scared of Americans, Yetter watched a movie about the Cuban Missile Crisis. As they watched, they spoke about the Cold War.
I said, we grew up being so afraid, and here we are. And she said, here we are working together. And I said, here we are loving each other. I mean, we really loved each other, and we still do. And that, to me, was like, it was what I really was afraid to admit to myself I hoped could happen.
Before she left Ukraine, Yetter's colleagues created a cell phone video of her talking about her service. She says Ukrainians she met were invariably passionate about the future prospects for their country. At the end, she echoes what India's Prime Minister Nehru predicted 40 years earlier.
It has been a privilege for me to take part in this time of your growth, and I've seen such change in the 2 years that I've been here, of people learning to work together and wanting to make life better. I have learned every bit as much as I have shared about what I know about love, and compassion and wanting to work together to improve our lives. So I thank all of you for sharing your lives with me.
Today, Ukraine has more Peace Corps volunteers than any other country. But the programs in Poland and Hungary were short-lived. Facing budget cuts in the late 1990s, the agency chose to put its resources into less developed countries such as Haiti and Bangladesh. Still, immediately after the fall of communism, Peace Corps programs in Eastern Europe and even Russia did much to break down stereotypes and longstanding mistrust between Americans and their former Cold War adversaries. Yetter and Waite both now live in Western Massachusetts. Waite is still helping entrepreneurs launch and run small businesses. He excelled at Peace Corps' second goal, sharing American culture abroad and becoming a part of the communities in which he lived. And his work today embodies the third goal, bringing it home. You're listening to Peace Corps Voices, an hour of stories from the Peace Corps' first 50 years. Brooke Stanley, too, married a man from the village in Burkina Faso, West Africa, where she served as a health volunteer from 2001 to 2004. Many people in the village are Muslim, and most weddings follow Islamic traditions. Brooke and her husband, Issa, too, wanted their ceremony to honor the village and its culture.
We were the first people in a long time, no matter, you know, outsider or local, to a lot of these traditions.
Historically, wedding celebrations lasted a week. Issa, too, says that would have been too much. They limited theirs to 2 days.
The first day, what we, like, the family would cook a lot of food, like a lot of meals, and they killed a whole cow and a lot of sheep and chicken, and so that people could eat. And in the afternoon, around 4 o'clock, and they start the music, and the music is the balafon. It's a main traditional music instrument in my village.
Eating, drinking, and dancing went on all night, he says, and involved the entire village. In the morning, with the music still playing, friends and family members offered money to the bride for establishing a new home.
And at some point, we get up, and I also give her money, like, not my own contribution, but it's a traditional thing. I have to give her money in public in front of people, right, everyone.
That's how he demonstrated his worth to her. In turn, Brooke, too, presented her groom with a selection of traditional mats village women wove from dyed palm fronds.
He wouldn't accept to put his feet on the mat until I showed him the most beautifully woven mat out of all the mats. So it was my demonstration to him of my worth.
The Twos say Issa's family and the whole village were very supportive of their union and their decision to revive traditional marriage rituals.
So it was really appreciated, especially by the older generation, that we wanted to do it.
Their wedding culminated Brooke Tu's African experience and her work on Peace Corps' second goal, cultural exchange abroad. Within the year, the couple would be living together in the United States and immersing themselves in the third goal, bringing it home. The start was not easy. Brooke, too, was adjusting to being back, and her husband struggled with American English.
We see now, I think, how kind of, I wouldn't even call it depression, but sort of muted our life was.
But just as Brooke, too, became comfortable in Burkina Faso, Issa, too, has settled into life in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where they now live with their young son. They plan to return to Africa, though, so he can grow up familiar with both cultures.
Écoutez mon message, car les mauvaises choses sont terminées. Le feu, c'est de l'enfer. Moi, je n'ai rien à faire. Parce que quand on dit enfer, c'est tous les maux du monde qui sont rassemblés. Famine, pauvreté, maladie, etc. Alors, pour vivre heureux, évitons le feu de tous.
My name is Carrie Manier. I served in the Peace Corps in Togo from 2003 till 2007.
In her 20s, Manier knew she wanted to be a farmer. But with an environmental science degree from a liberal arts college and no family connections to farming, she took an office job after graduation. A few years later, she went to Togo as a natural resources volunteer. Bush burning was rampant, and she saw an opportunity to broaden efforts to stop it. To discourage burning trees for fuel, she helped several villages start tree nurseries, which generate fuel for cooking and also improve the soil for farming.
And I was also interested in, bringing in environmental education component to radio and working with music.
She'd worked at her campus radio station in college and loved the vibrant, accessible community stations in Togo's villages. So she and another volunteer partnered with the stations to create a contest. Kids wrote public service announcements condemning bush burning. One of Togo's hip-hop stars performed at a finale concert for the contest. The winner recorded this song. You can see the music video online. Look for it on the Share Video tab of PeaceCorpsVoices.org. Munir also grew corn and beans on a one-acre farm and did some demonstrations on it. She extended her time in Togo twice.
I stayed a year and a half extra because I wasn't ready to leave. But you just establish so many great friendships and really adjust to life there. And you know when you leave, you'll never be able to go back to that.
In Togo, Munir resolved to pursue her original dream.
When I was in the Peace Corps, I was like, man, if I can survive in an African village for, 3.5 years, I can certainly figure out a way to start my own farm.
Before leaving, she lined up an apprenticeship on a small farm in Amherst, Massachusetts. After several seasons there, she's now looking for land to lease for her own farm. For Munir, bringing it home has meant turning what she learned in Peace Corps about herself and about farming into her life's work. The ways volunteers bring the experience home vary greatly. 5 Peace Corps volunteers in the Islamic Republic of Mauritania formed a band and recorded songs about their service, especially the challenges.
We got 3 types of jadia and bloody diarrhea. When in the river to take a piss, we all got just on some magazines. 7 hours to pull our class. It was long, but what a blast. After 10 weeks, I can't say.
The Peace Corps volunteers you met here universally found their service rewarding. They look back on the people they knew and the places they lived with fondness. They're proud of the work they did and feel that it was helpful. That doesn't mean they find the program without faults. Aubrey Brown, the early volunteer in Nigeria, has some qualms about the Peace Corps' impact on some volunteers.
It seems to me that the Peace Corps experience for some people may have been depoliticizing.
Brown became a community organizer and remained an activist when he returned. But he feels Peace Corps, especially during the anti-war movement of the 1960s, may have removed some would-be protesters from political activity at home. He also sympathizes with skepticism about the American government's motive for sending volunteers abroad.
And I know that there are ways of looking at the Peace Corps as an aid in U.S. domination around the world.
Brooke Stanley, too, recognizes that sentiment.
I definitely can relate to some of the issues that people have with the Peace Corps and don't disagree with them.
But for her, the person-to-person connections that Peace Corps fosters distinguish it from other programs and make it a worthy one.
As an institution, I still really do believe in the ultimate goals of Peace Corps. I don't know that they're always carried out in, at the fundamental level of, the 3 goals of Peace Corps ring very true to me.
Her husband remembers an agricultural volunteer helping farmers in his village when he was a child. And he credits the volunteer who served just before his wife with a construction project that nearly doubled the number of classrooms in the elementary school. In the village of Tangrala, Peace Corps volunteers left their hosts with a good feeling toward Americans.
I would say that it it has a real positive impact on the community in my village. I can't tell you about any other part in Burkina Faso, but in my village, they were really welcome.
Harvard economics professor Dwight Perkins has never been involved with the Peace Corps, but he's worked in the developing world throughout its history and has seen volunteers in the field.
They generally do useful things in the developing country, and they certainly do very little harm in the developing country, which is something you can't say about a lot of aid programs.
He says large-scale national development has never been the Peace Corps' goal, but he's hired many former volunteers to work at that level. They typically complement their Peace Corps experience with a subsequent graduate degree or technical skills. Having served in the Peace Corps sets them apart.
They come back much more sophisticated about the nature of the problems abroad than people who haven't had that experience, and more sophisticated than the typical person who's just been a tourist abroad. I mean, they have really lived within the developing country framework.
Over the last half century, Perkins says some countries, particularly in Asia, have truly developed. He offers South Korea as an example. Peace Corps is no longer needed there. Michelle Wynn Baptiste says St. Lucia, on the other hand, still has a ways to go. After 50 years, Peace Corps has helped St. Lucia improve education and health care. But she says the impact hasn't been enough to lead the country out of poverty.
And I've even gone back to St. Lucia a couple of times and seen that it wasn't really doing better economically than when I was there.
I wonder if 50 years in one country is too long, or if your methodology, your approach to problem solving is valid.
Jeffrey Potter, the Nepal volunteer, sees limits to what development workers can do.
The thing that you talk about all the time in development is you're working yourself out of a job. Success is not needing Peace Corps.
He was in Nepal working on his documentary when the Peace Corps pulled out. He says that country does still face many challenges. Dwight Perkins, the Harvard economist, says that for higher-level development work, advising countries on tax reform, for example, that idea is exactly right. You train people and then replace yourself. But that's different from saying Peace Corps should work itself out of a job. Its role is at the community level. He says gross domestic product, or GDP, is one measure of a country's development.
The U.S. would lose if the Peace Corps were ended. I mean, would the rate of growth of GDP of the developing world change? Probably not, but I think the U.S. would lose a lot.
And not only in the quality of future senior-level development workers. Perkins says many Peace Corps volunteers become active civic leaders here at home. He adds that notable benefits to host countries can come years later when former volunteers become influential advocates for the countries where they served. It's hard to separate the influence of Peace Corps experience on a person's life from the factors that led that person to the Peace Corps in the first place. But Murray Frank, the staffer who worked in Nigeria, marvels at the professional paths of that Nigeria group.
Only one out of 35, 36 volunteers went into business. Every single one of the others was teaching, law, writing, organizing, nonprofits of all kinds.
He says Peace Corps service has a lasting impact on volunteers.
Not every single one, but many will say to you when you ask them that it was the single most significant experience in their life. It changed them.
Author Stan Meisler adds that the volunteers inspire others. He maintains a high regard for Peace Corps alumni.
All the staff in the early days certainly became enamored of the volunteers. They were all our heroes. I ever lost that going through the history. The volunteer experience still strikes me as kind of heroic.
We've been together for almost a year, but we've only seen each other twice. I should have taken the advice to break things off before the end of stage. Now my pickup truck is broken down. I'm stuck at the Attar garage. You change your Facebook status to complicated. And so I had a pretty clear idea of what my fate is. still felt a shiver when you said goodbye. And even though we're in the desert, these tears ain't gonna dry. I'm all alone.
The 50th anniversary has prompted a variety of celebrations. Meryl Blau Menon attended one, along with other members of the first Ghana group. She met the man who photographed them in the Rose Garden back in August 1961. The event left her thinking about the future of the Peace Corps.
I'm optimistic. I met the director recently at this 50th anniversary at the Kennedy Library and was very impressed by him, appreciated his warmth and follow through as well. And the fact that he was a former Peace Corps volunteer certainly is encouraging.
Volunteers currently serve in 77 countries. Today, they often have internet access and can post photos, audio, and video from their service. Be sure to visit PeaceCorpsVoices.org. You'll find pictures of the volunteers in this documentary, some photos from their service, special web features, and more. And add your voice. Do you have a Peace Corps story to share? Again, that's PeaceCorpsVoices.org.
How can I forget you start to leave you behind when you're literally sitting next to me? This 12 hours feels like a lifetime.